fantastic passage that we're looking at today. It's one of those rippers that goes off in kids' church and have a great old time. But it's a passage that's so important for us to hear this morning as adults. It's a story about a great king who's humbled to the ground. You don't have to look far in our world to see stories of great ones who are humbled. The proverb, which actually comes from the Bible, pride goes before a fall, so often comes true in our world, doesn't it? This photo coming up on the screen. Does anyone recognise who this is?
Lance Armstrong.
Lance Armstrong. Seven times winner. Seven consecutive wins of the Tour de France and one gold medal at the Olympics. An absolute hero in the cycling world. Until, of course, it was revealed that he'd used performance-enhancing drugs. He'd lied for years and cheated. He'd even sued someone who was trying to reveal that he was using drugs. And all his honour was stripped away from him. In 2013, he confessed why it was that he'd lied for so many years. And this is what he said. I was a guy who expected to get whatever I wanted and to control every outcome. It's a dramatic picture of pride, isn't it? And when we see him fall, we all cheer. Justice is dealt. But if you're anything like me, it's very easy to distance yourself from a story like that. You know, we're just from humble old Sydney. We're from Menangle. We're not a celebrity. We haven't used performance-enhancing drugs. We wouldn't have pride like that. Doesn't that just reveal our hearts? We're better than him, aren't we? We wouldn't have pride like that. Now, our pride is far less public than Lance Armstrong, but no less poignant. We have lots to learn from our passage today in Daniel chapter 4. It comes after chapter after chapter after chapter of God humbling Nebuchadnezzar. The first three chapters of Daniel, we see God using a little bit of vegetables and water to show that he's far more powerful than all the mighty food in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. In chapter 2, there was the great dream that Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom is just like all the other kingdoms that will come and go. In chapter 3, there was a fiery furnace, and God showed that he's able to save his people. Chapter after chapter, God humbled Nebuchadnezzar, but he didn't learn a lesson. Until this chapter, chapter 4. And you might not notice it, but actually it's a change of genre. Chapter 1 to 3 is like third-person narrative telling the story. But chapter 4 is actually the words of Nebuchadnezzar himself. He is the one who's recounting how he's been humbled. He wants everyone in the world to know that he is not king, but that God is. And we're going to learn three things from this chapter. Firstly, the root of pride. Secondly, the result of pride, and then finally, the remedy for pride. Well, chapter 4 begins with a familiar scene. Things are going well for the king, and he has a restless night's sleep. All the men in Babylon, they can't interpret the dream, except for Daniel. And this time, the dream is about a big tree that represents the king. Let's have a look at verse 20. The tree you saw, which grew and became strong so that its top reached to heaven and was visible to the end of the whole earth, whose leaves were beautiful and fruit abundant, and which was food for all, under which beasts of the field found shade, and in whose branches the birds of the heaven lived, it is you, O King, who have grown and become strong. Your greatness has grown and reaches to heaven, and your dominion to the ends of the earth. Nebuchadnezzar is likened to this great tree. He is like the Garden of Eden, the life source of the whole world. Under his branches, everyone finds peace, prosperity, and protection. His reputation is known among the whole world. Even Israel is brought under this great tree. And the problem isn't the king's power. The problem is that he's forgotten where his power comes from. And he's like a tree that thinks it planted itself. Even after everything in the book so far in Daniel, he hasn't realized that he's not the ultimate king. That he's not even in control of the length of his prosperity. And Daniel warns him that his kingdom's going to be cut down and warns him to humble himself. Verse 27. Therefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by practicing righteousness, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the oppressed, that there may perhaps be a lengthening to your prosperity. Daniel is loyal to this king, even this foreign king, and warns him, stop sinning. Come back to God. He's the one who's in control of the lengthening of your prosperity. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't listen. Verse 28. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of the 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace, and the king answered and said, is this not great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty words, by my mighty power, as a royal residence for the glory of my mighty majesty? And this verse here gets to the heart of pride. Nebuchadnezzar is on the top of his temple, on the top of his castle, he's looking out over his whole kingdom. What does he do? He takes the credit for himself. Is this not great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence for the glory of my majesty? That is the root of pride. Looking at what God has given us and taking the credit for ourselves. This week, Emily and I, we celebrated our 1-year wedding anniversary. We had a lovely dinner down at Cronulla. It was the full moon, so the waves were riding in the shore. And we reflected on the past 12 months of marriage. And God has spared us from much suffering over the past 12 months. But compared to a lot of our friends, it's actually been a relatively enjoyable start to our married life. And this is where the temptation of pride comes in. Pride wants to look back at our last 12 months and say, you know what? That's to our credit. Maybe if we were to appropriate Nebuchadnezzar, what we'd say is this not great marriage, which we have fostered by our quality time together, our active listening for the glory of our reputation? Our pride might be far less spectacular than Nebuchadnezzar's, but it's the same root, isn't it? Look at whatever God's given us. We take the credit for ourselves. But what is it for you? What's something that God has gifted you with that you're tempted to take the credit for yourself? Maybe it's the home that you've been able to afford after lots of saving. Maybe it's the family legacy that you've left. Maybe it's the people you've met and the places you've experienced. Maybe it's the decades of Christian life. These things are gifts from God. He gave these things to you. But where pride comes in is where you take the credit for yourself. And even when these things are taken away, pride still remains, doesn't it? Like COVID, does anyone remember that? We all felt so robbed, didn't we, in those years? We felt robbed because the things that God had given us were taken away. We weren't able to see family. Some of us lost our jobs. We lost 2 years of our life. We felt robbed because those things are ours, right? Doesn't that just show the root of pride? That we think the gifts that God has given us belong to us. Pride runs deep within our hearts, in my heart and in your heart. We rob God of the glory that he has given us. But what is the result? From verse 30. The king answered and said, is this not great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence for the glory of my majesty? While the words were still in the king's mouth, he hadn't even finished his sentence, there fell a voice from heaven, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And you shall be driven from among men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. You shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and 7 periods of time shall pass over. Until you know that the Most High rules the kingdoms of men and gives it to whom he will. How long was the delay? Immediately, the words were fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from among men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven his hair grew as long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like birds' claws. The great king, who once provided for all the beasts of the world, has now become like a beast himself. From the highest of all humans to barely a human at all. The result of pride is being wildly wrong, right? For many years, Nebuchadnezzar had robbed God of the glory he deserved. He played the role of God. You don't bow down to me, I'll kill you. He acted like God. Eventually, it caught up with him. The result of pride is being brought down. Sometimes it happens in this life. The peak later who drives down the main road and then crashes his dad's car. The Israelites, who for so many years rejected God, who were then exiled into Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, who took the honor for himself, was then lowered down to eat grass. But even if we don't reap our pride in this life, we're all going to reap it at the end of our life. Philippians 2, verse 9 to 11 on the screen. God has highly exalted Jesus and bestowed on him the name of his above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, heaven and on earth and under the earth, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Now for a season, we take the gifts that God gives us and never once giving thanks, but on that final day, we all will be accountable to him. For the home he's given, for the family he's given, for the experience he's given, for the faith he's given, whatever he's given us, we will be accountable on that. What would we say? Why is it that you felt entitled to the gift that I gave you? Why is it that you boasted in what you had and looked down on others who didn't have that gift? Why is it that you felt wrong when it was taken away from you? Why is it that you didn't use that gift to bring honor to Jesus? Every single knee will bow, no matter how great, no matter how small. They will all have to confess that we are not Lord, but that Jesus is. And on that day, we will not be spared from judgment. So what is the remedy? Well, our business world has caught up to the danger of pride. Here's an article that you can find lots of articles like this up on the internet. How to be humble. 10 pro tips. Here are some of the tips that are given. Be aware of your own shortcomings. Be open to learning and adapting from others. Be open to changing and shifting and adapting, even when it's challenging. Now, to give this article credit, I actually think that these tips are helpful. That if we never are open to learning and adapting, then we're actually kind of playing the God role. We think that we have that all sorted. We never acknowledge our own shortcomings. We're still playing the God role. But we should acknowledge our own limits. We should learn from others. But the problem with these tips is they actually don't deal with the root problem. That even after fulfilling all 10 of these pro tips, we still haven't given God the glory that he deserves. The hero in this article actually is us. We need to implement these things. We're the wrong remedy for our solution. We can be the pro, which ironically means we can be proud that we've dealt with our pride. Sounds weird, doesn't it? Now, the true remedy comes from Daniel 4, verse 34. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven. And my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are counted as nothing, and he does according to his will among the hosts of heaven, and stay his hand or say to him, what have you done? What's the remedy for pride? I lift my eyes. It's not looking around in the stables and comparing. It's not looking even within. It's looking up. And when we look up and when we see God who he is, we respond like Nebuchadnezzar. I bless the Most High, praise and honor him. The remedy for pride is looking up, giving the credit back to God. Have any of you been to Luna Park and seen those mirrors? Those, you kind of stand there and think, oh, this looks strange. My feet look, my legs look tiny and my arms look really nice and muscly and my head. That's what pride does. When we look at ourselves, we think, oh, we look pretty good, don't we? Look at this great kingdom. Look at this great. The remedy for pride is looking up and seeing the right portrait, the real mirror, that, wow, we are not big. We are so small. That God lives forever, whereas our life, our kingdoms, they're just temporary. That God is everything, and we are counted as nothing. He does according to his will, and he's not accountable to us. The remedy for pride this morning is looking up, not to the roof, not to the clouds, but looking up to God, seeing that God is on his throne right now, with Jesus at his right hand. Realizing that our lives are just temporary, what we have are just gifts. We are not God. And the mind-blowing thing that we see when we look up, that Nebuchadnezzar couldn't even dream of, is not just a big God, it is a big God who humbled himself. Jesus, who did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Jesus is nothing like Nebuchadnezzar. He wasn't forced to humble himself, but he humbled himself freely. It wasn't out of fear, it was out of great love. For our sake, came from the highest of highs to become lowest of lows. Isaiah says he was marred beyond human resemblance. Not even looking like a human anymore when he hung on the cross. He died a death that no human deserved to die for us. And so for us, the motive for us to humble ourselves isn't just out of fear, not just that we've robbed God, actually that we've experienced the God who humbled himself for us. It's because we've experienced the humbling work of Jesus for us. That's what fuels us humbling ourselves. His spirit works within us, taking away that warped lunar path mirror that makes us look big. And the spirit is making us more like Jesus, realizing we are small. We can give on to God. Things that are most precious to us. They're not ours for our own benefit, for our own glory. Like Jesus who gave of himself to us. That's the pattern that we have to follow. The end of Nebuchadnezzar's life. He's given back all his gifts. The gifts aren't the problem. But he's a changed man with those gifts. That he uses all his power and influence over the whole world to do what? To write down the form. Proclaim it to all peoples, languages, and nations. That's what he uses his gifts for. That he would be small and God would be big. If God has chosen to spare Emily and I from lots of suffering that we deserve, what are we going to do with our marriage? What are we going to do with our time, with our health? Whatever God has given for you, it's not for your credit, not for your glory. Dear Father, every single gift